the purpose of journalism is to question the prevailing wisdom. Question the prevailing wisdom.
Just speak the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
All rights reserved and affirmed.
Free all minds. These are weapons of mass
descent. These are weapons of mass descent.
Welcome to Uprising, a daily digest of independent news analysis, investigation, education, artistic expression, and activism. It's Monday, February 22nd, 2010, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar.
It just makes me stop and think. Silence is not an option.
Celebrating Black History Month, we'll hear the inspiring voices of Martin Luther King Jr., James Baldwin, Langston Hughes, Billie Holiday, and many others.
Sorry if my eyes drop when the bell on meadows out, but I can't help myself, why should I?
This is Uprising.
You and I have never seen democracy. All we've seen is hypocrisy.
I am somebody.
I do not believe that a few people should control the wealth of any land.
We are not begging for our own freedom. It is up to us to take it.
You know, when you go to jail for a righteous cause, you can accept the inconveniences of jail with a kind of inner sense of calm and an inner sense of peace.
Sing, sin we, thin gin we, jazz June we, die sin.
I would have to know once and for all what rights I had as a human being, even in Montgomery, Alabama.
And again, the name of the drama is Freedom.
Thou shalt not believe that the world supports the United States.
If this society of yours is a great society, God knows I would hate to live in a bad
one. I think that the human race does command its own destiny, and that destiny can eventually embrace the stars.
The sounds of Black history as preserved in the Pacifica Radio Archives. Good morning and welcome to Uprising. Today, as we begin to wrap up this pledge drive, we spend the hour exploring the Archives' 60th anniversary Black History Collection, much of it newly preserved and digitized through a special grant from the American Archives pilot project funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Many of the recordings in this Black History Collection were previously publicly unavailable due to severe tape deterioration, but thanks to new restoration technology, we can once again share these historic voices on radio that have been obscured in silence for decades. The collection of more than 50 hours of Black history recordings include Martin Luther King Jr., Ralph Abernathy, James Baldwin, Langston Hughes, Billie Holiday, Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, Dick Gregory, Ozzie Davis, Angela Davis, Julian Bond, Stokely Carmichael, Amiri Baraka, and many, many others. And it's our thank you gift to you today on 5 MP3 CDs for a pledge of just $150. Today, we want to begin our program with actor and activist Ozzie Davis, who many of us here in Southern California loved and were fans of, and all across the United States. He was an active civil rights activist. And in 1964, on August 9th of that year, Ozzie Davis spoke in Pacific Grove, California, about his essay, The Wonderful World of Law and Order. Today, more than 45 years later, we hear a newly restored version of that speech by Ozzie Davis. It's one of the many, many dozens and dozens of speeches and recordings and interviews and documentaries on Black history that is our thank you gift to you today for a pledge of just $150. Let's take a listen to Ozzie Davis.
Our churches will say that segregation is immoral because it makes perfectly wonderful people, white and black, do immoral things. Our courts will say segregation is illegal because it makes perfectly wonderful people, white and black, do illegal things. And finally, our theater will say segregation is ridiculous because it makes perfectly wonderful people, white and black, do ridiculous things. That was the point I had in writing the play, and that's the point I hope to have gotten across. Now, but we're talking about the wonderful world of law and order. If you'll recall the scene between old Cap'n and Get Low and Charlie, old Cap'n was defending what was to him ordained of God, the world of law and order. And it was this world, this peaceful relationship between the two groups, that he had such a sentimental attachment about. And anybody who attempted to change that were threatening the very foundations of civilization, law and order. Because old Cap'n believed, as quite a few of us believe, white liberals and black liberals, sometimes too much, that law and order is the essence of civilization. But this is not necessarily true. Justice is the essence of civilization. And where law and order is imposed upon a basically unjust situation, sooner or later, there is bound to be a clash between law and order, no matter how respectably presented and preserved, and those forces whose cry and need for justice makes them unable to accept anymore a real respect for law and order. I do not say this with any sense of pride in having been liberated from all respect for law and order. I realize what chaotic conditions could come about if the integument, if the skeins of law and order were to be abandoned and we were to resort to settling our dispute in other means. I know what would happen. I really want law and order, but I realize that law and order presupposes justice in the first place. And when we speak of the young people in the streets of Harlem who have no respect for the policeman, we begin by remembering that the policeman had no respect for those young people in the first place. When we speak of young Negro hoodlums, which is a word I hate to use, I don't use that kind of word because it gives permission for a policeman to shoot a human being and to forget that he is a human being. But when we describe these young people as going out and looting, breaking stores open and robbing jewelry and socks and underwear and garments and things, we deplore these things. But let us not forget that the looting that goes on silently and quietly, even on the level where the policeman at a certain time every week goes to a certain bar and picks up a brown paper bag filled with money. If you want to judge who is the more successful of the looters, those unfortunate young people who are in the streets on these hot August nights, or the policeman who has for years made it in a middle-class society by looting everybody in the community, by turning his back on dope, by turning his back on gambling and prostitution, by not insisting on the preservation of even the most basic rights for the members of those communities, I think you would know where the looting began in the first place. And if there is to be respect for law and order, it must be based upon a mutual understanding and a respect. The law must respect those who are under the law, and order must be maintained for the benefit of all of those who are under the law. We face a great crisis in our country today. We have been called upon by some of our leaders to refrain from demonstrations and protests because they might be construed as an attack against law and order. And we are so concerned that this attack on law and order might give ammunition to the white backlash and enable Senator Goldwater to come in as president. And there are those who think that this is the only and the greatest harm that could come to the cause of the Negro people. Now, this is a debatable point. I personally would not like to see Senator Goldwater as president, but at the same time, I'm forced to ask, if there is a white backlash, what is it lashing back from? Where was it all the time? Am I sure that those who are lashing back were not waiting for somebody to come along and give them an excuse to lash back? I'm not so certain. I fear greatly that the Negro people, after mounting once again a magnificent struggle for their freedom, as they have done so often in the past, will be asked once again in the name of the larger freedom, in the name of the larger community, in the name of law and order, to halt their struggle. And once again, we'll come out of that struggle as I personally came out of World War II to find that I had lost the war that I thought I had won. And I would hope that those of us who ask of us patience, those who ask of us waiting, will meet us with a real program of action with real goods, with real remedies, so that we will have something to be patient about, something to wait for, something that we can understand and appreciate and explain to ourselves and our children why it is necessary to take this particular tactical step. We take it now at the darkest hour of the night, but in order to make it peaceable and to better prepare us for the action which will come at dawn. Thank you.
Actor, activist, playwright, essayist, the late Ozzie Davis, whose voice is preserved in the Pacific Art Radio archives clear as a bell, as you can just hear in this incredible recording where he discusses his essay, The Wonderful World of Law and Order. We understand that this essay is so relevant today. The things he's discussing, so relevant today when there are still record numbers of black men being incarcerated and police brutality continues, as here in Los Angeles, we see the trial for the murder of Oscar Grant, a young black man in the Bay Area, the words of Ozzie Davis remaining relevant. And his voice, alongside the voices of Martin Luther King Jr. and Langston Hughes and James Baldwin, Dick Gregory, Amiri Baraka, Ralph Abernathy, Angela Davis, Billie Holiday, and many, many, many others are preserved on an incredible 5 MP3 CD set that we are offering to you today for a chance to not only own, but as a chance to support Pacific Art Radio. 818-985-5735 is the phone number to call. Yes, we are still in our pledge drive, but we're wrapping it up. We're in the home stretch. We are nearly done with this pledge drive, and we can do it with your help. And what I am so excited about today is that we are able to offer you a thank you gift that is exclusively Pacifica Radio. You cannot buy this on the street. You cannot buy this in a bookstore or online in some, you know, at any of the major online vendors. You can get it through Pacific Art Radio and KPFK today at 818-985-5735. It's going to be and has been one of our most popular thank you gifts. This pledge drive, it's brand new because many of these voices are newly digitized. Some of them have been re-restored. We had had them restored, but not well enough. And through new technology and a grant, they have been now better available. 818-985-KPFK is a phone number to call. Joining me in studio is Mark Torres from the Pacific Art Radio Archives, who's intimately familiar with this collection, this fascinating and incredible collection. Mark, welcome back to Uprising.
Well, thanks for having me, Sonali.
So we had such an amazing response to these sounds the last time that we played just small snippets of them that I wanted to bring you back. I wanted to play new sounds from this incredible collection. But we did play the Ozzie Davis clip one more time, which I think was just an amazing way to open this program. He was a very important person here in Southern California, but also across the nation. What, you know, we only got a tiny taste of this recording, but you've heard the whole thing.
Yeah. What's really amazing about Ossie Davis is that he was so influential in the civil rights movement that most people don't know. He was not just, I wouldn't say behind the scenes, but he was a guiding force in the intelligentsia and the artistic community, in the black community. But he also was able to communicate, you know, to all audiences. He was a real special person, and we're really fortunate to have this early 1963 recording of Ossie Davis. 818-985-5735. People don't know that. I think Spike Lee made it famous that Ossie Davis gave the eulogy for Malcolm X, but he also gave the eulogy for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. at an impromptu gathering at Central Park in New York City the day after he was assassinated. Hugely important, a guiding force. Wow. In many ways, and we have this captured on this very special collection.
818-985-5735 is a phone number to call. We have four callers on the line right now. We want to raise as much money as possible so that we can end this pledge drive. And we want to thank you with this exclusive and unique and empowering gift. I mean, this material is educational. It's inspiring. You can and should play it for your children, share it with them so that they know what happened. I mean, you may read about this history in your history books, but to hear the actual voices, that's an entirely different experience. And that's the power of radio. radio, that intimacy, where you actually hear the inflection of people's voices, how they spoke, the power, the emotion, the passion. And we're so excited that we're able to, so privileged to be able to offer this material that we have collected, this network has collected for decades now. Pacifica Radio going in its 61st year, KPFK, its 51st year. 818-985-KPFK is the phone number to call. We have 5 callers on the line. We can accommodate a few more callers. Mark, let's talk about Lady Day. Billie Holiday, one of the greatest musicians in American history. She is on this incredible 50 hours of voices.
Well, if you want to put it in context, this was produced a year before NPR was even thought of.
Before NPR was even conceived of as an idea?
Before it was even conceived. It was done in 1967. NPR wasn't even conceived of until 1968. So Pacifica Radio has really been groundbreaking in recording these incredible voices. Two of our top producers, that would be Gene and Fabs D'Alessi, were producing many, many wonderful programs in the 1960s. They decided that, you know, Billie Holiday kind of fell out of favor because of her drug use in her later life. She died very young in 1959, and, you know, it was almost like she was forgotten, all the amazing things that she had done. Well, Gene and Fabs D'Alessi put together an incredible documentary going from her the very beginning of her life to her death in 1959. And the things that you find out are absolutely fascinating.
And this entire documentary is on our collection?
It's a two-hour documentary thanks to the American Archive Pilot Program and a grant that they gave the Pacifica Radio Archives. We were able to restore this two-hour documentary, which has amazing testimonials from the likes of Dizzy Gillespie, who played with her in her early career, Studs Terkel, Lena Horne. It just goes on and on. It's really fabulous. And there's also readings from her biography, Lady Sings the Blues.
And in this next excerpt that you've prepared for us, Mark, she talks about the song Strange Fruit. Tell us, set up this clip for us.
Well, this is, everybody has to remember, this is pre-civil rights era by a long shot. It was very common for African Americans to be lynched in the South and elsewhere. And it was a very, very, it was a time of true terrorism here, domestic terrorism here in America. But it was gone, it was left unspoken in many arenas. Well, Lady Day would not sit down idly and let this happen. So she very subtly wrote a song called Strange Fruit about, to talk about the imagery. It was a metaphor for the lynchings that were taking place on a very regular basis here in America.
This two-hour documentary is just a small part of the entire 5 MP3 CD collection, 50 hours of material. The Pacifica Radio Archives, the 60th anniversary Black History Month collection, we've squeezed it all onto 5 MP3 CDs to give you as much material as possible. It's our thank you gift to you today for a pledge of $150. Let's take a listen to this documentary about Billie Holiday.
During my stint at Cafe Society, that a song was born which became my personal protest, Strange Fruit. The germ of the song was in a poem written by Lewis Allen. I first met him at Cafe Society. When he showed me that poem, I dug it right off. It seemed to spell out all the things that had killed Pop. Allen, too, had heard how Pop died and, of course, was interested in my singing. He suggested that Sonny White, who had been my accompanist, and I turn it into music. So the three of us got together and I did the job in about 3 weeks. I also got a wonderful assist from Danny Mendelson, another writer who had done arrangement for me. He helped me with arranging the song and rehearsing it patiently. I worked like the devil on it because I was never sure I could put it across or that I could get across to a plush nightclub audience the thing that it meant to me. I was scared people would hate it. The first time I sang it, I thought it was a mistake and I had been right being scared. There wasn't even a patter of applause when I finished. Then a long person began to clap nervously. Then suddenly, everyone was clapping.
She asked me, she didn't know I was, but it was a party for me because I was going in the Army. It was 41. And then I says, well, Strange Fruit, of course. And she sang it.
Speaking in Chicago, Studs Terkel.
And the way she sings it, she said there are several versions on record. One was an old Commodore, and one was a later one that Norman Granz put out. It's a wholly different, strange fruit, and yet both equally overwhelming. That last word, you know, to pluck. How's that last line go?
He is a strange and bitter cry.
A strange and bitter crop. And she'd break, always broke. Not in the manner of Ella Fitzgerald, that's my point. It was not what I call an artistically conscious break. It was a break that came out of the whole meaning of Billie Holiday's life.
It caught on after a while, and people began to ask for it. The version I recorded for Commodore became my biggest selling record. It still depressed me every time I sing it, though. It reminds me of how Pop died. But I have to keep singing it, not only because people ask for it, but because 20 years after Pop died, the thing that killed him was still happening in the South. Over the years, I have had a lot of weird experience as a result of that song. It has a way of separating the straight people from the squares and the cripples. One night in Los Angeles, a bitch stood right up in the club where I was singing and said, "Billy, why don't you sing that sexy song you're so famous for? You know, the one about the naked bodies swinging in the trees." Needless to say, I didn't. But another time on 52nd Street, I finished a set with Strange Fruit and headed, as usual, for the bathroom. I always do when I sing it. It affects me so much I get sick. It takes all the strength out of me. This woman came in the ladies' room at the downtown club and found me all broken up from crying. I had come off the floor running, hot and cold, miserable and happy. She looked at me, and the tears start coming to her eyes. "My God," she says, "I never heard anything so beautiful in my life. You can still hear a pin drop out there." Just a few months ago, in a club in Miami, I had run through an entire 2 weeks date without even doing Strange Fruit. I was in no mood to be bothered with the scenes that always come out when I do that number in the South. I didn't want to start anything I couldn't finish. But one night, after everybody had asked me 20 times to do it, I finally gave in. There was a special character who had haunted the club for days, always asking for Strange Fruit and Gloomy Sunday. I don't know why he wanted to hear either one. He looked like Gloomy Sunday to me, but I finally gave them what they asked for as an encore. When I came to the final phrase of the lyric, I was in the angriest and strangest voice I had been in for months. My piano player was in the same kind of form. When I said, "For the sun to rot," and then a piano punctuation, "For the wind to suck," I pounced on those words like they had never been hit before. I was flaying the audience, but the applause was like nothing I've ever heard. I came off, went upstairs, changed into street clothes, and when I came down, they were still applauding. Not many other singers ever tried to do Strange Fruit. I never tried to discourage them, but audience did. Years after me at Cafe Society, Josh White came on with his guitar and his shirt front split down to here and did it. The audience shouted to him to lead the song along. A few years later, Lillian Smith told me the song inspired her to write the novel and the play about a lynching. You know what she called it.
Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
Thank you.
And that's none other than Billie Holiday singing the haunting song Strange Fruit. We just heard an excerpt of the documentary Lady Day, a 2-hour documentary that features excerpts from her biography read here by Roberta Kinney, also voices of people like Dizzy Gillespie, Studs Terkel. What an incredible document of American history, and a woman like Billie Holiday, who commented on in such a poetic way on the worst injustices of American history. We want you to have a copy of this documentary, because this history ought to be listened to by every single American. 818-985-5735 is the phone number to call. 818-985-KPFK. If you were moved to tears by what you just heard, call us. Support Pacifica Radio. We have preserved this history, and it is up to you to not only help us preserve KPFK and Pacifica, but also to keep this history alive and to disseminate it far and wide. 818-985-5735. It's a $150 pledge for a 5 MP3 CD featuring the voices of A$AP Brown and Stokely Carmichael, Bobby Seale, and Angela Davis, Julian Bond, Dick Gregory, Sarah Vaughan, Huey Newton, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., Langston Hughes, James Baldwin, Ozzie Davis, Amiri Baraka, Ralph Abernathy, Adam Clayton Powell, so many voices. And it's incredible, powerful material. It's exclusive. It's unique. It's 50 hours of material on 5 MP3 CDs preserved by the Pacifica Radio Archives, much of it newly restored and digitized thanks to a special grant being made available for the first time during this pledge drive on this Black History Month, as we celebrate Black History Month through Pacifica Radio. 818-985-5735 is the phone number to call. We have two callers on the line. We're halfway through the hour, and we are almost near the end of this pledge drive. With your help, we'll do it. We'll make it happen. Mark Torres from the Pacifica Radio Archive still with me. He is intimate with much of this material and has helped us prepare these incredible sounds, these snippets of sound from the 5 MP3 CD set. Mark, we did really, we had a wonderful response from listeners the last time we played these tracks, because I think listeners really respond to this history, to the voices.
Well, I'm not surprised, because this history that we have isn't available anywhere else. It wasn't recorded anywhere else. It wasn't of interest anywhere else. Pacifica Radio would go out and record these amazing voices that were highly controversial back then. But in many instances, like in the instance of Malcolm X, we see him, you know, he was public enemy number one at one time. But today,
he's on an American stamp.
He's on a stamp. He has a film about him, and people do a lot of research. But the point is that Pacifica Radio has these voices. You cannot really capture that by just reading a text. You have to hear the passion in the voice. And time again, we hear this.
And the next voice we're going to hear is none other than Martin Luther King Jr. talking about his philosophy of nonviolent resistance. And after that, if we have time, we're going to play Bobby Seale talking about the Black Panthers' philosophy on self-defense and the use of weapons for self-defense. And it's an amazing, interesting juxtaposition, two different aspects of two different times from Black history and the Civil Rights Movement. 818-985-5735 is a phone number to call. Make a pledge of $150 to Pacifica Radio, and we will keep this radio station going, and we'll send you this 5 MP3 CD set. You can load it up on your MP3 player, stick it on your computer, and burn CDs, audio CDs if you want. You can use it any way you wish, and you can listen to it while you're driving to work every day, or back and forth to work. You can listen to it while you're working out. You can share it with your classmates if you're in a college classroom. If you're a teacher, share it with your students. If you're a parent, share it with your children. If you have a group of friends who are interested in these kinds of things, share it with them. And who wouldn't be interested in hearing about American history, Black history? So much of it has been obscured over the years and then unearthed. And we have found here at Pacifica Radio Archives that we have managed to preserve it and restore it and save it through your generous donations. 818-985-5735. 7735 is a phone number to call, 818-985-KPFK. We have three callers on the line, four callers on the line right now. If we can just get two more callers calling in, I want to turn to none other than Martin Luther King Jr., who, of course, was the central figure in the civil rights movement, the highest profile American black leader. And his voice is also preserved in the Pacifica Radio Archives. And much of this is on the MP3 CD set that we are offering to you.
I think the listeners will be absolutely amazed that these recordings go back to the early 1950s. 1953 is the earliest selection on this particular set with W.E.B. Du Bois, Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois from Harvard University. And I think people will be absolutely amazed at the quality of these sounds.
Let's take a listen to Martin Luther King Jr.
Now let me come to one of the basic points. From the very beginning, there was a philosophy undergirding the boycott. We often refer to it as the philosophy of nonviolent resistance or the philosophy of passive resistance. As you well know, this is a method made famous by Mahatma Gandhi of our generation, and he used it to free his people from the political domination, economic exploitation, and humiliation inflicted upon them by Britain. The method of passive resistance. Now, that was always a problem of getting this method over because it didn't make sense to most of the people in the beginning. And so we had to use our mass meetings as a place to get the philosophy of nonviolence over to a community of people who had never heard of the philosophy and in many instances were not sympathetic with it. We had meetings twice per week on Mondays and Thursdays, and we used these meetings as an opportunity to teach and lecture on the philosophy of nonviolent resistance. And even in the midst of our struggle, we had institutes. We had an institute on nonviolence and social change to study social change and to get over the philosophy of nonviolence. There were certain basic things that we had to make clear in the beginning about this philosophy. We had to make it clear that this was not a method of cowardice. It does resist. It is not a method of stagnant passivity and deadening complacency. The nonviolent resistor is just as opposed to the evil that he is standing against as the violent resistor. But he resists without violence. This method is passive physically, but dynamically active spiritually. It is non-aggressive physically, but strongly aggressive spiritually. Another thing that we had to get over concerning this method was the fact that the nonviolent resistor does not seek to humiliate or defeat the opponent, but to win his friendship and understanding. And this was always a cry that we had to set before the people, that our aim is not to defeat the white community, not to humiliate the white community, but to win the friendship of all of the persons who have perpetrated this system in the past. The end of violence, or the aftermath of violence, is bitterness. But the aftermath of nonviolence is reconciliation and the creation of the beloved community. And that is the type of thing that we are trying to get over. That a boycott is never an end within itself. It is merely a means to awaken a sense of shame within the oppressor, but the end is reconciliation. The end is redemption. And then we had to make it clear also that the nonviolent resistor seeks to attack the evil system rather than individuals who happen to be caught up in the system. And this is why I say from time to time that the struggle in Montgomery The struggle in the South is not so much a tension between white people and Negro people. The struggle is at bottom a tension between justice and injustice, between the forces of light and the forces of darkness. And if there is a victory, it will not be a victory merely for 50,000 Negroes, but it will be a victory for justice, a victory for goodwill, a victory for democracy. The method of nonviolent resistance seeks to attack evil systems rather than individuals who happen to be victimized with these evil systems. That is another basic thing that we had to get over. That is that nonviolent resistance is also an internal matter. It not only avoids external violence, external physical violence, but also internal violence of spirit. It not only refuses to shoot a man, but it refuses to hate him. And so at the center of our movement stood the philosophy of love, the attitude that the only way to ultimately change humanity and make for the society that we all long for is to keep love at the center of our lives. Now, people used to ask me from the beginning, what do you mean by love, and how is it that you can tell us to love those persons who seek to defeat us and those persons who stand against us? How can you love such persons? And I had to make it clear all along that love in its highest sense is not a sentimental sort of thing, not even affection, an affectionate sort of thing. It's very interesting that the Greek language uses three words for love. It talks about eros. And eros is a sort of aesthetic love. Plato talks about it a great deal in his dialogues, a sort of yearning of the soul for the realm of the gods. It has come to us to be a sort of romantic love, and it stands with all of its beauty. We poets write about it and we read about it. I guess Shakespeare was thinking about Eros when he said, love is not love which alters when its alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. It is an ever fixed mark that looks on tempest and is never shaken. It is a star to every wandering bark. You see, I can remember that because I used to quote it to my wife when we were courting. That's Eros. That's Eros. But when we speak of loving those who oppose us, we aren't talking about Eros. The Greek language talks about philia, and this is a sort of reciprocal love between personal friends. And on this level, individuals love because they are loved. This is a type of love that we have for our close and intimate friends. This is a vital, valuable love. Now, when we talk about loving those who oppose you and those who seek to defeat you, we're not talking about eros or philia. The Greek language comes out with another word, and it calls it agape. And agape is more than eros. Agape is more than philia. Agape is understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. Biblical theologians would say it is the love of God working in the lives of men. It is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. And when we come to love on this level, we begin to love men not because they are likable, not because they do things that attract us, but because God loves them. And here we love the person who does the evil deed while hating the deed that the person does. And it is this type of love that stands at the center of the movement which we are trying to carry on in the Southland, agape. It is also impossible to understand the Montgomery movement without understanding a certain spiritual basis of the movement. It's impossible to understand it without seeing that nonviolence in the final analysis is based on a sort of faith in the future. Now, I'm quite aware of the fact that there are persons who believe firmly in nonviolence who are not theists, who do not believe in a personal God, but I think every person who believes in nonviolent resistance believes somehow that the universe, in some form, is on the side of justice, and that there is something unfolding in the universe, whether one speaks of it as an unconscious process, or whether one speaks of it as some unmoved mover, or whether someone speaks of it as a personal God. That is something in the universe that unfolds toward justice. And so in Montgomery, we felt somehow that as we struggled, we had cosmic companionship. And this was one of the things that kept the people together, the belief that the universe is on the side of justice. And that is something in this universe which justifies Carlyle in saying, "No lie can live forever."
And that's, of course, the voice of Martin Luther King Jr. speaking in 1957, was it,
1957.
Mark? And he is speaking about his philosophy of nonviolent resistance. Such a beautiful, I mean, he essentially what he spoke was an essay on nonviolent resistance and his philosophy of nonviolent resistance. This entire speech going all the way back to 1957 is available on the 5 MP3 CD set. That's our thank you gift to you today. It is our thank you gift to you. We have just about 15 to 17 minutes left in the program, and we want to hear from many, many more of you. We are looking for about 33 callers today that will help us reach our goal. And so far, we've had 11 of you calling in, which is not good. We definitely want to get many more of you.
We can get that flurry of phone calls, definitely.
And, you know, we know Mondays are slow. People come in from the weekend, and they, you know, you're sort of not looking forward to the week's work. But the faster we can get through this pledge drive, the faster we can get back to regular programming. For example, one of the things that I would really like to cover on this program, Mark, is the very disturbing incident that took place recently on the campus of Cal State, University of California,
yeah.
San Diego,
shocking.
UC San Diego,
shocking.
Where an off-campus party mocked Black History Month last week. They had a group of white students basically had a party with a theme of Black history, except that they were making fun of it, and they called it a Compton cookout. It had very stereotypical aspects to it. People were dressing up, and then students were outraged. The only 2% of UC San Diego students are Black. They were outraged, and they have made demands to their administrators. There was a second incident that supported the party where some students ran a program on the public television that supported the party as well, and on closed circuit television, rather, on Thursday night, last Thursday, supporting the party. And so there's been an outcry on that campus over the issue of Black History Month. You would think that we'd be past all of that by now, and that young people in particular would be more sensitive. But unfortunately, we are living at a time when white nationalism has seen a resurgence in reaction, I think, perhaps to the Barack Obama presidency. And it's so important that we remember this history and that we pass it down to our children. It's so important that we understand the background of American history. 818-985-5735 is the phone number to call. Here on Pacifica Radio Archives, we are celebrating Black history as it should be celebrated, hearing the voices of those people who lived Black history, who were leaders in the movements, who changed America, who made the change possible for us to even have a Black president. 818-985-5735 is the phone number to call. If you call and support Pacifica Radio with a pledge of $150, we will send you 50 hours of exclusive, unique material featuring some of the most powerful voices, some of the most famous voices in Black history on 5 MP3 CDs that you can't get anywhere else. It's unique and it's exclusive from the Pacifica Radio Archives. You can't find this anywhere else. Thank you so much for that call. That's 12 callers. We're still looking for many more of you calling
Keep
in at 818-985-5735. Thank you. That's 13 callers right now.
Okay.
We're getting closer
we
to
go.
Our goal of 33
right.
callers. 818-985-5735. We want to turn next to Bobby Seale speaking at giving a public talk. I believe
calling.
It was at Cal State Fullerton, who is a very interesting juxtaposition to what we just heard from Martin Luther King Jr., who talked about nonviolent resistance. And in this next excerpt, Mark, we hear Bobby Seale talking about the Black Panther Party and how they got started in Oakland, how their organization was first formed. And, you know, he wrote a book about his experience, and we want you to have this incredible speech alongside the Martin Luther King Jr. speech. 818-985-5735 is the phone number to call. 818-985-KPFK. Let's take a listen to Bobby Seale.
But let me get back to that first night of patrol. Black leather jackets, black berets, black slacks, black shoes all shined up. Stacks of the 10-point platform and program that we done printed in the War on Poverty office, the government, city government. We used the A.B. Dick machine in the city government. Stencil brand. We used their stuff. And we was getting paid, but we did our other job with the community. You know what I mean, for the jobs programs and all that kind of stuff. But at night, that poverty center was like really the headquarters of the Black Panther Party. But anyway, I'm just trying to say, after we went through all of this, we began to go out, and we decided we're going to go out and patrol the police. And we educated those brothers on how to take an arrest. Kid, no 10 or 12 people be talking one time. And we was a ragtag organization of about 12 or 14 people on the first night's patrol. And we drove down to do our first patrol to observe the police based on that California Supreme Court ruling that Huey had researched and found that every citizen had a right to stand and observe a police officer carrying out their duty. We had shotguns, half of us had handguns. He researched all the laws. One, as long as a gun was not concealed, it was not illegal. He had confirmed these things with his professor in the light law school he was going with. Two, while riding in a car, you cannot have a live round in the chamber of a rifle or a shotgun. Did not apply to handguns. You could not put a live round into the chamber. That is where it could fire. You could keep it in the magazine, but not in the chamber until you got out of the car. Three, even if you're playing around, if you have a live round in the chamber of a rifle or a shotgun, and you just accidentally pointed it at somebody with no intention whatsoever of shooting, that, under California law, Huey pointed out, constituted assault with a deadly weapon. So we researched all of that. We disciplined the group. Well, Bobby couldn't half read. We made him learn how to read with the autobiography of Malcolm X. By the time we hit the streets to do our first patrol, bang, there we were. We come out, got out of the car, got stacks of the 10-point program. I took a tape recorder and stuck it around little Bobby's shoulder while he carried his long shotgun. Several other brothers got long shotguns. Sister Marta Lava, the first sister who joined, she strapped down with a big 44 holster like Clint Eastwood. I'm telling you. Black berets or bush jackets and or leather jackets and black slacks or pants, what have you, all shine shoes, black gloves, etc. We want to look disciplined and organized to the black community, because too many times organizations come in, they're not disciplined and organized enough so people can respect them. So we got out of our car 100 feet back because the police was out there pat searching some brother, you know. We weren't going to come there to stop the arrest. That wasn't the point. The reason we were patrolling the police so we could capture the imagination in the black community to get the people to come down so we could organize them, politically raise their conscience, organize them, and ultimately organize a new black community unity, political electoral community unity, in reaction to the fact that they had killed and murdered Brother Malcolm X a year and a half earlier. We were still in all that period of time reacting to that. And finally, here we are. We get out of the car and we come down. It's it's dark, 8 o'clock or so. We're on 7th Street in the red light district. We had spotted down the street the police pat searching this young guy. It was 50 or 60 black folks standing on the sidewalk watching this police out in the middle of the streets with his new arrestee. As we walked up, we got out of the car with our platforms and programs. Everybody had their guns. We stepped off the curb and got in front of the people. We lined up about 40 feet, 40, 50 feet, disciplined and stood. Huey was at the front. I was next to Huey. Little Sister Marta Malata was here with me. Little Bobby Hutton was there with the tape recorder on. I had punched it on. And as we walked up and stopped, of the 50 or 60 people in the back of the crowd there, somebody says, "Hey, man, them dudes got guns out there." And somebody else in the crowd said, "Man, I'm getting the hell out of here." And Huey says, "Nope, nope, nope. It's not necessary for you to leave. We're a new organization. We're here to observe the police. We've already checked the law out. And all of you as citizens also have a right to stand and observe these police. They're brutalizing our people in the community, et cetera, and so on, so on, so on. So please, everybody, do not leave. Stay here. We're a very disciplined organization." And this cop had got out of his car, standing there listening to Huey. with his back to the cop, tell these people this. And the cop, you have no right to observe me. And Huey turned around and says, no. According, Huey rattled off these numbers or some shit. Wait a minute, let me finish. Huey says, according to such and such California State Supreme Court ruling, every citizen has the right to stand and observe a police officer as long as they stand a reasonable distance away. And that particular ruling, a reasonable distance, is constituted as 8 to 10 feet. I'm standing approximately 20 feet from you, and I'll observe you whether you like it or not. And some sister in the audience, she say, well, go ahead on and tell it, brother. The cop says, is that gun loaded? Huey says, if I know it's loaded, that's good enough. Well, I got a right to see that weapon. Huey says, no, your man. Huey went off into some legal stuff that he had found out about the 14th Amendment, about due process of law. Maybe it wasn't the 14th Amendment. Due process of law. And therefore, you cannot remove my property from it without due process of law. So stand back. Do not try to touch my weapon. If you want my weapon, you're going to have to try to take it. Well, is that gun loaded? What had happened is when we got out of the car on our first patrol, remember, there's no live rounds in the chambers of the rifles or the shotguns. When we got out and walked 100 feet down and got all that, they had forgotten, nobody thought to jack a round off into the chambers of the long guns, right? And the cop asked for a second time, is the gun loaded? Huey says, if I know it's loaded, that's good enough. So he loaded the weapon by jacking a round off into the chamber. When he did that, the other five or six brothers carrying long guns, remember, they didn't have a live round in the chamber either. And when he did that, the cop looked around. He didn't even realize 40 feet down here is all these other, I guess in his mind, a white racist guy. There's too many damn niggas with these goddamn guns. And the young brother up here, you know, getting ready to get arrested, when they're going, he said, hey, man, don't y'all shoot this way, brothers. Cop got his arrestee, put him in the car, you know, boom, let me get the hell out of here. Shut his front passenger side door, got in his car and drove off. That's exactly what we wanted. Because we got stacks of the 10-point program. I'm telling the brothers and sisters, we're a new organization in the black community, Black Panther Party, blah, 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 et cetera. We have meetings in political education and classes at 5624 Grove Street, where our office is located at 2 p.m. on Saturday night. Bang, bang, that's exactly what we wanted. The Black Panther Party was profound. It was called putting the civil rights movement on a cutting edge.
The cutting edge. Bobby Seale, co-founder with Huey Newton of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense in Oakland, which later the name got shortened to simply the Black Panther Party, speaking about those early days of organizing and how they got credibility in the black community in Oakland for their work. They were very inspired by Malcolm X's writings and speeches. Bobby Seale wrote the book Seize the Time, the true story of the Black Panther Party and Huey Newton. And this is in such contrast to what we heard earlier from Martin Luther King Jr., the philosophy of nonviolent resistance. And that's what's so incredible about this set of Black history, the voices that we have collected through the Pacifica Radio Archives, and is our thank you gift to you today for a pledge of $150. 50 hours of material, dozens and dozens of voices on 5 MP3 CDs, incredible material and very high quality. We have had 23 callers this hour. Are calling in. That means we are just 10 callers away from our goal. And we have less than five minutes left in the hour. In fact, our program started a little bit late, so we are running a little bit short. And help us make that goal. 818-985-5735 is the phone number to call. If we have time, we'll hear a minute or maybe two of Ralph Abernathy, another great leader in the civil rights movement. Please call us and help us reach that goal. We can accommodate four more callers right now at 818-985-5735.
Our bare bones staff at the Pacifica Radio Archives doing wonderful work. Brian DeShazer, Sean Dellis, Edgar Toledo, Mariana Berkovich, and myself have been the keepers of the flame of Pacifica. Over 50,000 recordings, and we have this amazing 60-year collection just for you today. Please get to the phone. There's another one. We need 9 more phone calls in 5 minutes. It's like 2 a minute. We can do this.
818-985-5735 is the phone number to call. Remember, you know, when you give your money to Pacifica Radio Archives and the Pacifica Radio Network, we make do with a lot less than a traditional network would. First of all, we're all underpaid. The rest of us aren't paid at all. And we, manage to really stretch our dollar because such a tiny skeleton staff of people are preserving the flame.
We're doing the work of 10 people.
818-985-5735 is the number to call. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for responding. This has been a fantastic response.
Five more calls. Please get to the phones. 818-985-5735.
So let's turn to Ralph Abernathy now, since we do have a little time and you responded. This is from the collection of the 60th Anniversary Black History Month 5 MP3 CD. Thanks so much for listening.
Keep calling.
This is the type of world in which we live with so many scientific and technological discoveries. Yet, we lag in the area of human relations. There are those who believe that you can judge the quality of a man's soul on the basis of the color of his skin, the texture of his hair, the type of church he worships in, his previous condition of servitude. And they pin these badges, these stereotypes upon us, and will not permit us to rise above them. In this society and in this America, in this nation, did you ever stop to think about it, that the most segregated school of the week is not the public school in Mississippi, but it's the Sunday school in the Church of the Living God? Something is wrong with the society. If our nation is to survive, then all of us will have to get into the struggle and fight for freedom. Our own safety and security is wrapped up in the safety and the security of the people of Asia, of the people of Africa, and all of the peoples of the world. For no man is an island entire of itself, but every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a cloud be washed away by the sea, then Europe is the less. One man's death diminishes me, for I am a part of mankind. So sin not and ask for whom the bell tolls, for the bell tolls for thee.
And that's the voice of Ralph David Abernathy, a leader of the American Civil Rights Movement, a minister, civil rights leader, close associate of Martin Luther King Jr. in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And he took over from King after King's assassination and the leadership of the SCLC Poor People's Campaign. He led the march on Washington, D.C. that had been planned for May 1968. We are out of time, folks. Please keep those calls coming in. If you get a busy signal, because our phone lines are completely maxed out, please just be patient. Take a couple of minutes and call right back. 818-985-KPFK is a phone number to call for Sonali. Subversive thought for the day. Huey Newton once said, "The walls, the bars, the guns, and the guards can never encircle or hold down the idea of the people." That's Huey Newton. That's Sonali. Subversive thought for the day. You've been listening to Uprising. Gabriel San Roman is our assistant producer. Teddy Robinson is our engineer. Very special thanks to Mark Torres from the Pacifica Radio Archives. I'm your host and producer, Sonali Kolhatkar. Thanks so much for listening, and keep those calls coming.